Okay, so when I looked at this article, I did come to it initially as a former language arts teacher. I really thought the idea of text was interesting and the idea of hypertext literacy. And I was hoping that it wouldn't be too boring for the rest of us, but then I'm reading the introduction and even the preface or whatever, and then the introduction of the author says, well, this is the content area I'm most familiar with, but I think that we need to look at all content areas with the same perspective. Are they learning it in a different way because of this exposure to a new medium? And I liked that it was an overview of this is what has been done, what other people have asserted, these are my opinions, and these are questions that we need to consider for the future. I'd like that. I didn't really want to look at a research report if there wasn't research really available for hypertext literacy. When I first wanted to talk to you guys about was the idea of reading. In that little movie clip that we just saw, they had gone from using scrolls where there's a very few people that could write on the scrolls, and then very few people that could actually read the scrolls, and then there was a printing press. And you all just like the printing press. But it did create a major change in human history. And so there were books. And with books, we had texts. It used to be long on scrolls that only a few people could read to the people, and it suddenly became available to the people. So literacy became a topic or something that people, more people, could expose themselves to and use to raise themselves up in a different way. The first books probably didn't have table of contents or indices or reference pages. The book evolved over time, over a long period of time, but it did evolve over time. And people saw ways that it could make them easier, more easily used by the people, and make them more accessible to the people. And I think we're seeing some of that now, with the evolution of hypertext and web pages, online writing, online reading. We're seeing tools being created, even in what we're doing in this class, that are supposed to help people, help students be able to interpret whether it's through the way that teachers teach, or the way that websites are constructed, the definition of audience, and when it comes to web pages, all that stuff kind of influences how people are exposed to the material. So that's kind of my jumping off point for this article. That's what really grabbed my attention was the idea of this evolution of reading and the evolution of text, and how maybe we should be asking ourselves some questions when it comes to teaching reading and writing as to what do we need to be doing differently, or what could we be doing differently. So, any questions or thoughts on the article before?
Okay, well, one of the things that it talked about was unilinear versus multilinear text. And I just put this on Blackboard recently. Unilinear text refers more to the paper, your print book. Okay, when you look at a book, it's there, you go from page to page, and generally you know that you start at page one, you end at the last page of the book, and you've completed the reading of the book. If you are looking for a particular chapter in a book, you look at your table of contents, use that to help guide your search, or if you can use an index in the same way. But it's there, it can travel with you, you know where to start and where to end, you know when you found what you're looking for. Multilinear text is a little bit more multi-tiered. You still have to kind of know where you're going. You need that focus, or students need that focus. And they often don't have that focus, I think. You have to be able to know when you've achieved what it is that you're looking for. But there isn't that logical path to say, you start here and you end here. You're often told to go onto the internet and find information about X, and maybe given 3 or 4 websites to look at to find that information. It's not as logical for them as opening a book, starting on page one, and going to the end of the book to find that information. But kids like it. They still buy into it. They still want to look at it. Why do you think they're more into the hypertext or the online text or reading than they might be a paper book these days?
There's more like the graphics. It's more dynamic.
More dynamic?
Yeah, I think it's more dynamic. They like to be able to visualize this to another. They compare with each other on different pages or sites that they've gone to on the same topics. There's lots of neat little features, bells and whistles. Sometimes the captions, if you click on a picture, the captions will be read aloud, or
Well, I like that they can click on words and find the definition read aloud to them. There's corresponding graphics, things to help them visually connect information to a concept or a picture, something they can visualize and see. So I think that there's
a lot of things the kids buy, and it's new. You know, they're not always allowed to be in front of it and see it, so it's still very new to them. So that's the unilinear versus multilinear. And I had this thing going through my head like the whole time I was trying to think of how to go about talking about this article. And all I could think about was the choose-your-own-adventure books from back in the day. And I tried to find some choose-your-own-adventure-type websites, and there are a few, but they're not generally not geared towards younger people, children. So I kind of skipped over that. But the whole idea where you start at one point and you make your decisions as you go, and whether you die in the middle or have a happy ending or anything in between, it's all about the decisions that you make. And that was, to me, the closest thing to print text as to the hypertext that we now have, like having to make your own decisions and kind of going through a process and choosing your own ending, whether or not you know it's going to happen when you go to the next page. So that was a neat little comparison. I also really liked, and I kind of referred to this already, how they talked about how technology has evolved with literacy over the past 500 years. Even with the introduction of technology into the classroom, with my background being in language arts, and not that I've been in the classroom that long, but seeing how going from one Windows platform to the next, using it for word processing, and then suddenly thinking of all these different ways, now we have internet access, what can I do with that? Now I have a concept mapping software, what can I do with that? It was always something the kids could come back to in my room, and it was always with the intent of promoting their understanding of material, whether it be through content area reading, reading skills, grammar, whatever it was. It was usually organization of thought and communication was my focus, but I could see that evolution even in my own classroom. As materials came in, I wanted them in my room. And then I communicated what I was doing to the language arts teachers, and so suddenly it was a department focus. Like, if I'm willing to come up with the lessons, everybody else is willing to try them. And teaching reading for several years, we did a lot of work and a lot of reading into content area reading and reading for understanding, what makes a good reader, what do kids have to do while they're reading. And it came down to usually asking questions, making predictions, thinking ahead, things that you do without, things that we now do without thinking, or some of us do without thinking, or consciously thinking about it. And I thought it was interesting that throughout the article, the author constantly reminded us that people need to, it's just ML, that this hypertext literacy is like hyper-reading. They have to be critical thinkers and critical analyzers all the way through. There's no conscious, if they're not consciously prompting themselves, you know, what might be next in this link? If I click on this, what might I come across? They have to constantly ask themselves questions, make predictions, do the same things that you do in traditional reading, but do it on their own. And hypothesis would be that teachers are assuming that because it's text and it's there and they can read it, but it's still different from print. So teachers are not requiring students to ask those same questions. You know, what am I looking at? You know, who are the characters here? How do these graphics relate? What might be beyond this link if I click on this? They're not asking themselves the same questions or doing the same analysis. So they're missing out on some literacy skills there. But they still require those literacy skills. So maybe it is as a teacher that they need to develop some of the literacy skills themselves. I think one suggestion was for professional development for teachers. Whenever I say professional development, I think boring. But it really can be very boring if it's not done right. But doing read-alouds, talking kids through the process of looking at a website. And so I have one little website, I pulled it up earlier, but how you might approach a particular piece of writing online and talk through the decision-making. Just metacognition, from recognizing the decisions that you make and talking yourselves through those decisions.
and doing that, modeling that for kids in a way that maybe they'll slow down a little bit, you know, maybe. That's just a start. But the other, I think towards the end, he suggested that if computers continue to come into the schools and high-speed internet continues to come into the schools at the speed that it is, and there's not this support for hypertext literacy, like if teachers aren't trained in that, or if they don't start to ask these questions, is there a difference between print literacy and hypertext literacy? Are my kids prepared to read these things online? That there could be some serious issues along the way. Because they are getting a lot of their reading from online reading. And a lot of textbooks are going to online textbooks where they pay for an online subscription. The paper books are extra. And that's the way of the textbook. Like either PDAs or for computer download. It's just where it's headed.
I don't know why. I feel like when I'm reading something that's kind of more than a couple pages on a web screen, I just feel like I'm reading through a window. And it's just almost out of context sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I really much prefer to, like, our research articles to print them and work from those.
Right. And I do as well. But it depends. Like if I'm looking at, like, an Adobe document online, and it's just a straight, flat text, I would prefer to print it, because to me that's just might as well be printed. There's nothing in it. But I have Adobe Professional, and there are some things I can do with it.
Yes.
But I haven't taken that step. But when it comes to general reading, I'll show you a website.
Like a website where they're trying to find information. Let's see this one. This is from Scholastic Teacher Activities Online. Sometimes the information is chunked. That's something else they were talking about. It's information being chunked into either tables, to blocks. You do web page design not to include so much information on that one page. You just kind of start to fizzle out. I think the same idea applies with this. But I liked this as a teacher to be able to refer kids to this page when they have 10 minutes in class and they want to look at something. This is something I'm okay with them looking at. This is a book online, sort of. It's about Sir Edmund Hillary, who was the first to conquer Mount Everest. And when you look at this site, like if you were to go over this with the class, you could talk through it out loud. Okay, what do we see here? Who is there a picture of? What does the little hand mean? If the little hand comes up, what does that mean? You know, it means you can click on something. So here's my little pointer, and here's my little hand. And the class could decide, you know, let's choose our adventure. Where do we want to go today? So maybe we want to meet Sir Edmund Hillary. Maybe this sounds cool. Relive Edmund Hillary's trek to the top of the world. So I would let them determine, okay, which way do we want to go? Why? What might we see there? So we start to ask those questions that you would ask in reading. What's on the cover of this book? Who is the author? Do we know anything about them? The questions I might ask if we were reading a print text. And it's not going anywhere. So we'll just start down here. Start with his adventure, and we would talk through, what do we see on this page? You know, I see a map, I see a mountain. Do we know what mountain it might be or what mountain range it is? Can we answer those questions by reading below? And then getting a kid maybe to read a little bit out loud or to see what kind of pertinent information they might find. So this is, you know, web reading skills, things that we should be able to do ourselves, and we're generally good skimmers. We've reached a point in our education where we can skim something like that. So we have to teach the kids those kind of skills too, because right now they're looking at what they can click on next. What's cool that can click on next? You've got to slow them down a little bit. Maybe having some type of concept map, something that they can fill in, something that can help them to guide their reading as they go along and continue through their adventure. And here's a little brain teaser. And here's a photo gallery. So they could choose, okay, where do they want to go next? And it might be that they want to learn about the Sherpas. So here you can go and meet Sherpas, and here's pictures. And they could try to explain what do they see in the pictures. So this is just like a guided reading, but it's online. So it's just a way to promote hypertext literacy. Taking the time, slowing down yourself, and not assuming that kids can read this stuff like they read a book in front of them. I mean, it's pretty and it has pictures and it's got words. And in our minds, maybe we can make a connection with like a picture book. But it's not a picture book.
It's a crazy book that can take them anywhere in the universe, you know, by clicking on something and at super fast speed. And if we continue to assume that it's picture books, the kids are missing out on a lot of information and a lot of quality stuff.
Okay, let's see here. So I'd like that. This is I'll put all the links together. It was teacher.scholastic.com. And then activities. And in the activities page, they have it sorted by different grade levels. And then computer lab favorites, which I actually haven't gone through myself. I imagine they're things you could put kids on in the lab, but I don't know. I hesitate to recommend those to my teachers because that's exactly what they'll do. They won't use them as a teaching activity. That's what I found, the Sir Edmund Hillary thing under content area reading, just to let you know. But they have all the different little kinds of things you can look at. Even to practice this kind of activity with teachers for a 15-minute activity. But to walk the teachers through the same process because they are not consciously... Metacognition is something they don't want to think that their kids can do. Like, my kids don't get that. But if they can get themselves to do it, it's a start. To get them to slow down a little bit and say, watch before you put kids on the internet. You think about it because it's like giving them the Library of Congress and saying, go find something on Mount Everest. It's going to take them all day to find it. But if you refer them to the right shelf in the right section and maybe a page in a book, you're guiding them in the right direction. You're not telling them exactly where it is, but you're helping to narrow down their search and teaching them how to narrow down that search themselves. So that's that site. Okay, another little site. So now I'm going to get off my article a bit. Eduweb.com, and it is a for-profit organization, so I do have to say that. But this is a site that I've gone to find jumping-off points for finding resources. They build websites for museums and other companies that are supposed to be educational, generally. And I go to their portfolio, and they have their latest and greatest stuff over here. Now, granted, some of it is for education purposes, but they're not all designed for schools. So everything should be previewed before you put it out because a lot of it's for museums, and what's okay in a museum might not be okay for school. Just a little preface. And I remembered my U505 activity, and I came over here to history. And my U505 activity is just World War II history. U-505 was the only U-boat that was captured by the Americans. And it's role-playing online. And this is a good modeling that you could do with your kids. It's interesting and different, and it has sounds, and it's loud, and it's neat. And it's choose-your-own-adventure, because the decisions you make could lead to the loss of your submarine. They could lead to the loss of your crew. But you're also learning about sonar, learning about all these little different things that were on U-boats. Or submarines. Also on this website, you get to hear an interview with two people that helped to capture U-505, and then the virtual tour, I believe it has like panoramic type shots. So find the U-505s when you get to be the Americans. But I like commanding it, being the Germans. It's just neat because the sounds are kind of drag them in, but you could do a guided web activity with a website like this. And I won't make you do this whole thing. And it kind of goes from there. But they have to make decisions, they have to try out these little activities, and they do a little bit of learning along the way, even if it's only for 15 minutes of a class, to say, let's check something else out today at this cool website. Let's see what it does. Oh, and they learned about the Enigma, the code machine that they had, which is a kind of neat way to learn about the Enigma through a code-breaking activity. And as the Americans, you can be sunk by the U-boat, even though that's not what really happened, and they have a tab that says what really happened, so you can go to the actual historical account. So you're on the Guadalcanal, and you're the new executive officer, and you're trying to capture the U-505 to get an Enigma in your possession. So it's just a way to get their attention and try something different. So I like that website. And if you want to play, then you have to go there. EduWeb is eduweb.com. And look at their portfolio. So we'll come back to that in a minute. Rewritethink.org is, I put that on that little list of links I sent you, and it's the only one I'm going to look at. And just briefly, I like this for the student materials. When teachers are looking for something for their kids to do, I refer to them to this website. It's not all reading, like reading language arts activities. Some of it's content areas. Sometimes it's just a little template for something they can use. Most of them have Flash of some kind. I like the comic creator. And Doodle Splash is a little plugin that you can use. There are lessons on this website that all refer to those tools. So if you want to know how to use it with a lesson, you can get ideas from there. But the actual comic creator is here. Name my cartoon. English fun. Wow, that's very creative. You just go through and the kids can build their little comic, maybe. Gimme. Okay, good, that's saved. What it does at the end is you can print it or you're done. One way around that, if you want them to be able to color it, is to take screenshots and put it into Paint. And so the kids can color it. And that kind of works with, we've used it with some of our special ed, like our severe special ed populations, to do storytelling. Because they don't have to draw anything. Then they can just type in short captions. So, one little way to use a web tool to get them to think about using internet stuff for educational purposes. Okay, we already did this. I can close that. But I like readwritethink.org. It's just different. But it's the International Reading Association, National Council of Teachers of English. And because I'm an English person, I'm biased. So I always look for English stuff, but I'm sure that there's math stuff that's just like it from the National Council of Teachers of Math. Yeah, maybe. So got to advocate for it. Marco Polo used to be linked on here, and it's not anymore.
This is my Delicious. I like Delicious because I like it to store my bookmarks online. I don't use it so much for the social aspect. Another thing, I know people really like Portal, and I'll never try to turn people away from Portal. But I like to have descriptions to remind me of what the website is, and this gives me that option. And the tags, I really like tagging. And to some people, it will be cumbersome, and they won't like it at all. But what you do is once you start your own little Delicious, or you can just look at other people's Delicious, it allows you to sync your favorites right into it, so it will suck them right in for you. And then you can go back and add your tags and your information later, which is kind of cool. On your home computer?
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't do it here.
Oh, your favorite. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, your favorites, your bookmarks. It'll suck them right in for you, and it'll sync it.
I think you can choose which ones.
Okay, because mom and I share, but I don't want all hers sucked with the
information. You have to check that, but I think you do check which ones you want.
Oh, Marco Polo was taken over by Verizon.
In random order, or in the order you put
okay,
in?
Okay, right now it's showing me by the amount that I, most, these are the most recent. This is by time. Over here in my, I believe I said cloud, it's showing in bold the ones that I've used the most.
That shaded area is a cloud?
They're calling this a cloud, yes. Okay. You can also do bundle tags, which I don't like. I just like lists. And the reason I like lists is because if I'm looking for something, see, I don't like that at all. Yeah. And now I don't have to do it, so we're just going to say go back. And we're going to go to what I like, which is lists. And the reason I like it like this is because it shows me all the tags that I have. So if I'm looking for something specifically related to education, I can just click on education, and it shows me on this page all of the websites that I have linked, well, pages 1-3, that are just tagged education. So if you want to edit, you just click on edit, and something good should happen. You have your title, which you can change. It has to have a title, it has to have a URL, and that's it. But I could change this, also called the yellow card in Stafford County. I'm going to delete that. The TSEPs are technology standard, all structural verbs, blah, 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 and I can add new tags. And save, and it'll update my little thing. my description. I use this mainly for me, and I refer other people, other teachers to it. I say if you're doing work for another class and you just want some help narrowing down your search, take a look at what I've tagged.
So I can log in?
You can just go to my website. You just go to delicious/Mrs. Emily H, and you can look at it any time.
Oh, okay, so an advantage would be, like in Porter Portal, I may have a website that's all under in more than one folder.
Mm-hmm.
And so here,
you can tag it with as many things as you want.
Okay.
So I'm going to do a post. I'm going to do a new one, and I'm going to post YouTube. So say, I'm going to go ahead and type it in, and there's easy ways to do this, but we'll just do it this way for now. And I'm going to click save. Okay, and what it's asking for is a description. This is usually where I put the title of the website. And then notes. This is where I type my little description. This website.
Cool videos.
Cool videos to share with my. Okay, and then tags. I'll say video. Anything else? Fun. And as I start to type a tag, it'll suggest tags for me that start with that letter, things that might relate. Or I could just come down here, like if it already fits with one of these, I could just tag it, just click it, click on the tag, and it'll match it up. And save. Now, the social, so YouTube has been, here's my little description. Here are my little tags. Okay, and here you see it's saved by 4,827 people. Now, the social bookmarking, the social aspect, is that you can add people to your network. And right now my network consists of one person. And the way you find people is either by knowing, like she sees my name up there and she can add me. Or I can come down here and see who else has added this NWREL assessment. So I click on save by 10 other people. Who might those people be? I don't know. Let's find out. So I click on it, and it shows the notes from the different people that have tagged it, and over here, posting history and when they tagged it. And I can go to that person's, like here, delay. Now, granted, I have never looked at this person's before, so I apologize if something offensive comes up. She's from Chowchilla somewhere, her hometown. And it shows me what else this person has tagged. So it might be that Teresa likes what I have tagged, so she wants, you know, she's like, oh, I like what that person has. I'm going to add her to my network. So, and then you can see updates, or you can check on what she has bookmarked. You come up to your network, you add, but you have to type in a name. And I think you're just, it's kind of like that library.
So I have one, but it doesn't have anything in it.
Right. So what do you do next?
I mean, it has one, but I don't remember.
You might not have added it.
But mine doesn't show network. I have to hit on your network first for that screen.
Are you logged in as you?
Uh-huh. It's just Emily Heller. But my root directory at the top is just delicious/Emily Heller. And then this is in here. I don't know if I did that.
So can you see who has met links to you? I can.
Yes, I can. I can view her network.
Okay, but how do you know who's linked to you, or you don't?
You don't.
Okay.
But you might. I have to play with that to figure it out. But I like it because to give somebody else access to your delicious, you just give them the website. And they just go there, they can see your bookmarks, and use what they need to use. And there are articles out there about how teachers have used it for kids to post bookmarks. I've seen activities where elementary school kids have posted to the same delicious.
Really?
But I don't understand quite how that works. So that's something we can look at for another day. So that's a cool way to keep the websites from professors with a way to remember what it was that they were talking about.
So if I click on your name, am I seeing your?
It's whatever. If you look at the top, you'll see delicious and then whatever. That's whom. Yeah, it is a lot like that.
You have one thing in there.
Okay, and if you do use Delicious, if you decide to use it and continue to use it at home, on your home computers, you can go to settings and you can add buttons so that instead of having to go into your Delicious and say post and type it all in, you can add little buttons that all you do is click on the button that says post to My Delicious, and it will post to your, it'll automatically pop a window up where you fill it in. It posts it right away and then takes you back to the screen you were looking at.
Okay, what's with the blogging?
Where is that? You can, looks like you can link into your blog and it will update your blog with the most recent posts to your Delicious.
The top next to your network, what is subscriptions?
Subscriptions allow you to watch all your favorite tags in one place. After you add a tag to your subscriptions, Delicious watches for everyone's bookmarks saved with that tag and delivers them to your subscriptions page. The tag aggregator, good for watching what people are bookmarking about a favorite topic. So if somebody else, if you tag for education, it's going to dump all the people, all the things that people tag with education into your Delicious. You are.
Yeah.
Because I'm not a complete idiot. Yeah.
You are not. I see that you have Michael Pullen on your Delicious.
Yeah.
Forward-thinking guy. I have lost my Delicious, but that's okay.
No problem.
Sentence of teachers are provided with the professional development opportunities they need to adequately integrate technology in the service of academics.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. It needs to be adequate professional development.
That's a really neat article. When I saw the title, I was like, I'll just admit it.
Some articles you look at and you're like, what the heck did I just read?
Yes.
You know, like boring. Did this
happen? Thanks. It took a couple readings for myself as well, just to kind of to get a feel for it and what was the point. But I think they could, somebody should do something like this for science and math and social studies and still look at the same issues in the different content areas.